What's up, class? This is Optimus Field, and we're back for another Teacher's Lounge. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. And we are at block height 665,966, and the current price is $37,425. So, guys, it's been a week. Nick, what's your thoughts on all this?
It's been a stressful week. There's been a lot of stuff going on. I'm glad that it's Wednesday, tomorrow's Thursday. The week's kind of coming to an end. 2020 got off to a really, I don't want to say rocky start, but 2020 was a bad year for most people. It was a good year for Bitcoiners, but this week has just been crazy with censorship and all this other stuff. I know a lot of Bitcoiners are trying to move off Twitter to Mastodon. And while that's been cool, I don't think that's actually going to work. I think the Bitcoin conversation, this bull run, is still going to be on Twitter no matter what. I've been contemplating leaving my social media just with some of the stuff that's been going on, the censorship and a lot of the other stuff we'll get in later tonight. But yeah, things have been crazy.
Yeah, man, it's been a crazy week in Bitcoin world and in the world at large. But before we get into all that, we have a few questions from people that are either interested in Bitcoin or just getting their toes wet, and even some that I got from people that I was dealing with in my real life. And so the first one, this one comes from our buddy Tony Nakamoto's friend. He's in the chat, and it's gonna be a pretty good discussion. I feel like it. I mean, to us, it's. I feel like it is what it is. But hold on, I don't think I wrote it down. My bad, guys. I wrote every other one. All right, so Tony says, one of my bros might join us tomorrow, and he's wondering, why is BTC the future currency? And Winicus, he's in the chat, he responded with, it has the best properties as money and a store of value. And personally, just like my short shill on why I think Bitcoin is going to be the future currency is just it's just a simple comparison in regards to gold and fiat or dollars or paper money and Bitcoin. And it's just like a zoomed out look at all them considered as money. And the way that I like to put it in my head is gold as money was optimized to be used over time. And so money in general is just a form of or a medium to store your energy over space and time. And so fiat or paper money is best adapted to store its value over space because it's going to be able to be transported easily, more easily than gold. But it's got one big defect to it in that it doesn't really store its value through time. And in my opinion, and I know all us Bitcoiners' opinion, Bitcoin is the best of both worlds because Bitcoin as money is able to store value through time and space. So it won't lose its value into the future. It will actually gain value into the future. And it's the most easily transportable money there is. It's literally, you know, it's ephemeral. You can't touch it, and you're able to send it over the internet. We live in a digital age, and so the digital age should have a digital money, and that's what Bitcoin is. And so that's my two cents on why I believe Bitcoin will be the best money. And I don't know, you guys want to chime in? Anyone has a more eloquent way to show this to our buddy?
Anyone?
I have one. Oh, he's gone. I don't even know who's talking.
Just for
you got
Andrew.
The floor.
Yeah, Andrew.
All right. All right. Well, I was trying to find the quote, hence the silence, but I know Mises wrote in The Theory of Money and Credit that basically they're, you know, in the market, there will be a bunch of different competing currencies, and ultimately there will be one currency that outcompetes all the rest. So just under that, I mean, we know that there can't be multiple major currencies. There has to be one currency. It has universal, saleability, liquidity. And right now, if you look at the network effect that Bitcoin has, even if you hate Bitcoin, you have to admit, it's winning by a long shot as far as the amount of participants in the market who actually hold it. So that's a big point, I would say, even just compared, to other altcoins, is the network effect. Once that's solidified, I think, as Michael Saylor said, he's never seen $100 billion monster network, just go away before. So that's kind of the way I view Bitcoin overtaking other currencies.
Yeah, I agree with you. The whole thing about money's a winner take all system. There can't be multiple winners. And even today, in the fiat world, everyone really only wants US dollars. You don't want your national home currency. You really just want US dollars, because when things go south in your national home currency, US dollars has been the safe haven. And now it's just moving from US dollars to Bitcoin, because Bitcoin, when it was created in 2009, it was just this new competitor on the market that, is just the clear winner. And the market has been choosing Bitcoin as the winner ever since then. And you see just these huge, boom cycles of Bitcoin, and it's just gone up tremendously ever since. And it's going to only continue going up for the time being.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get confused because they see today there's tons of countries have their own currency. But a lot of people don't understand most I think it's 70% of foreign currencies are either backed by dollars or have they aim to peg it to some value of the dollar. So it's most of the world is just using dollars as a currency, or a dollar derivative currency. So we really still kind of have a single money. It's just instead of having what we want is Bitcoin, where just we have a finite supply dictating our money, or a gold backed money where we had in the past dictating how much could be printed. Now we just have, some old white dudes in Congress or at the Federal Reserve dictating, what our money can be.
Yeah, I was going to say I totally agree. I live here in Mexico. And some people pay their rent in dollars, some people get paid in dollars. It's definitely is a fact. One currency just dominates the rest. And just here the Mexican peso is, pretty bad compared to the dollar. So I totally agree.
Yeah, and I know when you first get into, quote unquote crypto, which is, your shitcoinery phase. I know people or shitcoiners and scammers try and lure you in with the thing of, oh, you're going to be able to pay for, in any currency you want in the future. You're going to be walking around with 30 different cryptocurrencies on your phone. And while that sounds cool and that sounds like the future, it's really stupid. It sounds smart to dumb people, It sounds like a great idea, but in reality, it's not. It's terrible. It's overcomplicated. You don't need more than one currency.
Dang, Nick, you just reminded me, when I got into the space, I fully remember that argument of your dentist will have its own Dentacoin, and you can pay you can pay your dentist in its own coin, or whatever. Your mechanic will have a coin, and your hospital will have a coin. And when you first get in, oh, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, everyone can make their own coin. But then once you get down to it, it's but should they? And that's when it really sinks in that it's no. It's just going to make everything more complicated, make all our economic calculations even more convoluted. And now everyone has to have different exchange rates for each various coin that they need to interact with every person in their life. And it's no, people just want one thing to measure value. So like they can make their lives easier. You know, it's so much easier just using Bitcoin, going anywhere in the world and the person takes Bitcoin. You're like, okay, cool. We're all finally communicating with one language for money. And that's Bitcoin and will be Bitcoin for the next 7 billion people on planet Earth.
Yeah. And it's like when we're all working towards, you know, we're all working towards, like, okay, so shitcoins and altcoins and stuff, they slow down the process of hyper-Bitcoinization a bit. Like, I was reading, again, the book Andrew said, The Theory of Money and Credit by Mises, and I remember Mises saying that multiple currencies limit the development towards a unified monetary system, and it's like, just get on board with Bitcoin, you know. We're trying to usher in hyper-Bitcoinization. Don't waste your time with shit coins, just Bitcoin only.
Hence why we do the show. Jim, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I wanted to expand on something you said earlier about storing value. People that are not thinking in terms of Bitcoin would look at putting their dollars into Bitcoin with the price fluctuations, as they would, many people would see that as not storing value very well. It's, you know, they see it as risky. And I would just encourage them to just keep studying money in general and understand that when you own a fixed amount of Bitcoin, you own a fixed amount of the entire supply of the network that will ever, ever be. And so your share can never be diluted. And when we say that it stores value, that's one of the concepts we're talking about, that you buy a certain amount of this, you trade somebody, in this case, you know, some people's willing to sell their Bitcoin to you for US dollars that they, you know, they can go and spend and do things with, but you own this Bitcoin now. And once you own it, you own it, and you own that same fractional share of the entire network forever. And the idea behind it being worth more in the future is simply the idea that's been you know, talked about and implemented around for 12 years now. The idea that more and more people might want it, and therefore the value of each individual little piece gets worth more. And part of the reason it gets worth more is because no one could dilute the amount you have. No one can add any more into the system like they can do with dollars and all the other fiat currencies. So it may seem like it's risky and fluctuating, but when you have a long enough time horizon, it's gone up for 12 years overall, like 11,000,000% or some insane amount. And the likelihood it's going to keep going up for the foreseeable future, if not for many generations, hundreds of years possibly, in terms of its purchasing power. And once all the other currencies are out of the picture, everything will just be priced in Bitcoin. A couple of generations from now, people won't even remember. They'll remember mass history, but they'll think people were crazy to use those fiat currencies when Bitcoin's working for everybody one day. So, yeah, for those of you just learning about Bitcoin, if you get yourself some, study money, you'll understand that you have this undilutable portion of this future monetary network that's going to matter, and you really ought to take it seriously. Thanks.
I concur. Christopher, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, on the... I can't believe you shilled DentaCoin on this podcast.
Well, but, I didn't shill it. Let's be clear.
That's funny. Let's see. I just wanted to like kind of compare it to all the other currencies on Earth, where, you know, the currencies are actually controlled by, you know, politicians or people that bureaucrats that politicians appoint. And politicians always get into this issue where they want to promise a whole bunch of things. But then when it comes time for like paying for it, you know, through taxation or whatever, they usually come up short. And so they end up getting into debt. And so what they do is they inflate the money supply, which penalizes savers. So like Bitcoin, by comparison, all of us are, you know, participating in this system because, you know, we have, you know, come to the understanding that we can actually control the scarcity of our money And so that we don't have to experience that punishment against savers that are actually planning for the future. So Bitcoin becomes like the most attractive of that type. As one of the cryptocurrencies, it's got the best emergent network effects, you know, because the market has decided that this is the currency that the market wants to use.
Beautiful. I'm sure we can keep going on this for a minute, but there's a few questions that pretty much relate to what we're talking about. And they are basically like, how does Bitcoin have value if you can't quote unquote use it? And then how is it money if I can't touch it? And how is it money if I can't buy things with it? And these are all things that have personally had to deal with people in my real life. And I know I took this from, I think it was Jessifer's friend or someone that was texting him about it. And it's all very simple. Like, you can buy things with Bitcoin if you really want to. We would recommend that you hold on to it because of all the stuff that we're talking about, and we'll go into it a little later why. And then I just think, like, what do you guys tell people when they ask you, how is Bitcoin money if you can't touch it? Because, like, I'm usually like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Like, you have ones and zeros in your bank account and you're not worried about it. But Tony, you want to jump in? I see you unmuted yourself.
Yeah, it's exactly what you were saying. Yeah, usually I just say that the money on your card is digital already. So there's no difference in, like, digital cash or digital, you know, whatever. So yeah, it's the same digital money. That's usually what I say.
Yeah, it seems so simple to us now on this side. But I feel like that is one of the biggest things that turns people off. It's like, I can't touch it. Like, why? Like, you're crazy. How are you investing or saving? Even if you can get them around the idea of saving a Bitcoin, it's like, you can't touch it. And then it's closely followed with, but what can you buy with it if it's money? And it's
value doesn't come just from a medium of exchange. It comes from the other, you know, uses as well. Like, that's, again, straight out of the same book, Theory of Money and Credit. It's my money's function and importance doesn't come from a means of exchange. It comes from a store of value and unit of account and, you know, other properties as well. It's the complete lack of knowledge of money, and that people think, oh, well, money's just this thing that I give to you to pay for things. There's a lot more to money. And as you learn more about Bitcoin, that will become more clear and obvious to you. But a more important feature to money is definitely store of value. Well, the three that go in unison together: means of exchange, store of value, and unit of account.
Maybe we should break that down for someone, Nick.
So first is like your means of exchange. That is just you pay for things, you receive a payment in, you know, the said currency. And, you know, that's just super simple. Store of value is something that, like, fiat money today is missing. You can't store your value in dollars. Like, I'm sure, like, I've heard this multiple times growing up. I'm sure most people have. But, like, you have this scenario where you can either store $1 million in, you know, gold, paper money, or, like, you know, stocks wine. Or whatever. Or what?
Wine.
Or why? Yeah, wine. It's like, what are you gonna do? And literally almost no one chooses cash because they know it's gonna be worth less, you know, in a year's time, 5 years times, 10 years times. The purchasing, like, the US dollar amount will be the same, but the purchasing power will be significantly less. So Bitcoin is different since they can't print more of it. There's a limited supply. Over time, it gets more scarce and your purchasing power goes up. So I know there's this meme where it's like one Bitcoin used to buy you like some groceries, and then it used to buy you, you know, a car, or now today it buys you a car. And like just over time, it goes up from like little things to bigger things. And like in the future, one Bitcoin will be able to buy you a house and so on and so on. And that is a good store value. That's something Bitcoin really gets. And unit of account, that's just kind of like you use Bitcoin for everything. Like it's your actual unit of account. You count your profits and you count your trades all in, you know, said currency. So Bitcoin, for example. And I'm sure someone could expand on that a little bit more, but that's just the way I see unit of account.
Thinking in sets. Ben, you can hit it.
I like to think unit of account is like this is what you price everything in. So not just like, you know, when you go to Taco Bell and like a taco is a dollar. Now, if it was a Bitcoin world, it'd be like 3 sats or something. And then, you know, your paycheck isn't, you know, like $1,000. Now it's, you know, 1,000 sats or something. So like this is what your entire life is now like denominated in. Because like if like today, like most people in America, you know, they denominate their life in dollars. So like they don't see dollar fluctuation really because, you know, their paychecks in dollars and then their groceries are in dollars and all their bills are in dollars. So like the price of the dollar doesn't really matter to them because their entire life is priced in dollars. So like in a, eventually in a hyper Bitcoinized world, you know, Bitcoin ebbing and flowing isn't a huge deal to you anymore because everything you're buying is denominated in dollars or in Satoshis or in Bitcoin now.
Dang, dude. Ben is so bullish. He said your whole paycheck will be 1,000 sats. Ooh, wow. Dang, bro. But yeah, I just want to add, like, the way I usually wrap my head around this is first people need to save in the money. So store of value. People need to have a savings in this currency, this medium of or this money, so that it can become a medium of exchange. But all these things happen at once. So like you save in something, in a medium, and then once people have enough savings in it, they can interact and trade with others, the medium of exchange. And then once everyone is, you know, on the same page, then everyone is thinking in that unit of account. So these are emerging properties of money, and this is all happening simultaneously with Bitcoin. If you're familiar with the price rise, you know that price rise is an indicator of more people saving in the currency, in the money. And like we've said earlier in our presentation, you know, there's ways for you to receive Bitcoin through your services or your skills. And so those are medium of exchange. You're you know, participating in trade, and all of us in here think in sats. So maybe the whole world isn't using Bitcoin as a unit of account, but the majority of Bitcoiners are already ahead of the curve and thinking in sats or thinking in Bitcoin. And that is already the unit of account for many Bitcoiners. So these properties of money are all happening at once. You just kind of have to tap into it and you'll see the light. If I can use that phrasing.
Hey, can I drop in here?
Yeah, hit it.
Okay, so if I'm talking to somebody and I get the feeling that they're sincerely interested, I would just ask them, do you got 50 bucks? Like, go buy a 3-pack of Open Dimes. And then when you have them, I would be more than happy to like come over and like, you know, go ahead and set up an account so that you can buy some Bitcoin. When you have a couple Open Dimes, I'll be more than happy to come over and help you through the process of just dropping like 20 bucks of Bitcoin on each of those Open Dimes. I think that's how I would handle that kind of stuff. And that's actually a conversation that I had recently. It's, you know, and because the reason I say this is because I just I don't really care to try to convince somebody until they're like sincerely interested. And if they go through the process of purchasing a 3-pack of Open Dimes, you know what? That's a demonstration that they're actually interested, because I don't have time to like try and convince somebody. It's like I kind of see it as a waste of time. But if they actually demonstrate some interest, then that's a whole different kind of like dynamic. And so that's kind of how I would handle that, is go buy some Open Dimes. I will be happy to answer questions. And guess what? If you don't want those Open Dimes, I'll buy them off of you. You know, it's almost like a kind of like an old school sales pitch. It's like, you know what? I'll buy those off of you if you're not interested. So there's like literally like no risk to them by buying 3 Open Dimes. So that's kind of how I would handle it.
And they could physically touch it. They'd be like, oh, look, I can touch it.
Exactly. You know, and that's I really like the Open Dimes, because then you can get into physical bearer assets. And then you can use the analogs of, like, say, holding a silver dollar or, you know, like a gold round or whatever, and explain to them that, yes, you can, you know, and most people, they'll take a silver dollar in payment. But guess what? A Bitcoiner that knows what an Open Dime is, they will absolutely take that in payment as well. Just most people just aren't there yet. And so, like I said, I really like that approach, because you can get into physical bearer assets, and then you get into other forms of money, but you cover the metal thing, you cover the paper thing, but then you also explain, like, this Open Dime is a physical bearer asset as well that is absolutely verifiable. That opens up showing them how to, like, look at a transaction, you know, through like a block explorer. And if they decide to load some Satoshis on it, then you can watch them learn this stuff. I think you see what I'm saying. You just kind of, but that initial demonstration of sincerity is, I don't have enough time to freaking like try and convince somebody, you know. Anyway, that's just how I roll with it, man. It's so,
you reminded me of the Satoshi quote. If you don't believe me or don't get it, I don't have time to convince you. Sorry. Classic. Or the newest one. Have fun staying poor.
Right. Life is too short, man. Life is too short. Time is more scarce than, you know, time. Or that's a great argument. I really like how Saifedean frames that argument, that we need a money that is equally as scarce as our time. Any other money that is not equally as scarce as our time is an inferior form of money. And so that to me is the ultimate argument, is I get to store my energy and time in something that is absolutely as scarce as time itself. So anyway, that's beautiful. Enough out of me.
Yeah, I definitely like that that angle that safety put out. I definitely think in the same terms. And even furthermore, like, most people know the saying, you know, time is money. And furthermore, now, you know, like, money is time. And once you start breaking that down for people, I think they'll see the light. And this kind of relating to what this next question we got. And so I put out on Twitter, on our Bitcoin Kindergarten profile, like, what do you guys want to learn about Bitcoin, or what questions do you have about Bitcoin? And besides the few troll questions that we got, the one question that we got that I feel we can get into is, what is NGU technology? And so, but the way they phrased it was, what is NGU tech? And Nick and I first thought is like, oh, that's our alma mater. Like, that's the college I'm at right now. NGU Tech. It's lit. But that's just jokes, guys. So what is NGU Tech? The idea or the question to reframe it is, what is number go up technology? And personally, like, I'll put in my two sats, and then everyone can either correct me or just add on to it. When I think of number go up technology, what we're saying, besides the standard meme of like, look at the chart, number goes up and to the right. When I think of NGU Tech, what I think first, my first thoughts are, it's a culmination of properties of Bitcoin, and they all essentially have to do with how the monetary network works, or the monetary properties. And so on the one hand, it has to do with the fact that Bitcoin is hard capped at 21 million. And then what people in the know consider the difficulty adjustment, added with the halvings and the weekly or the biweekly difficulty adjustment, all those together are what NGU Tech is. So the idea is, Bitcoin is hard capped, and there's only ever going to be so many Bitcoins that are currently being produced. And that has to do with the difficulty adjustment. So even though more miners come on the network, you can't ever create more Bitcoins. And then roughly every four years, we have the halving, which makes the supply get cut in half. And so, you know, simple economics, supply and demand. If the demand goes up and the supply goes down, then there's an equilibrium and something has to give way. And in Bitcoin's case, that is the price going up. And so I'm sure we can dive. We could do a whole presentation on just these ideas. But I don't know. Anyone want to jump in and have a more eloquent, maybe technical explanation of this? Tony, Ben, you want to get technical on us real quick? I know you can do it. Kaz could probably hit it too. But yeah, you guys could all hit it. Someone jump in.
I cannot be very technical, but just very quick side note that when I was getting into Bitcoin, for me, like $100 was like a lot of money to put into technology I don't completely trust. And what I see now is that people have more trust. So when I was dipping my toes and buying like $10 worth of Bitcoin, it was already a big deal. I wasn't sure. And now people are like, yeah, whatever. No, I want to throw 1K, whatever. So I see that NGU technology works also in a way that people trust more, and then just more money are getting thrown at it. And so the number goes up eventually. Yep. But I would love to listen to some technical explanation as well.
I mean, I think you had a good point there. Ben, I'll let you jump in. But it's like, the more you understand NGU technology, the more confidence you have in the network. And the more you are a participant in number go up, because you're just unloading the bucket, you know, unloading the truck and going all in. But Ben, hit it.
I would say Bitcoin's NGU technology comes from basically its supply cap, where not only its supply cap, but also its supply schedule, where we can't, even though it's fixed in supply, we can't mine all 21 million Bitcoin tomorrow if enough demand comes. You know, it's the schedule where every 10 minutes, only like right now, 6.25 Bitcoin can be mined. And because of that, when we have a pent up demand, like we kind of are seeing now, where tons of people are buying normally in markets, what happens is generally that'll mean more supply will come in to fulfill that demand. So like, you know, like earlier this year, like when like hand sanitizer became a huge thing, we saw like, you know, like Tito's Vodka going to make a hand sanitizer and tons of stuff like that to meet the demand. So then thus the price of hand sanitizer didn't skyrocket like absurdly, because there's increasing supply to meet this demand. But now with Bitcoin, you know, the amount of Bitcoin being mined can't be increased heavily, so we're getting all this demand and the supply can't meet it. So that just means price goes even higher and higher And this is only benefiting like the Bitcoin holders, where, you know, if you do hold Bitcoin now, you're just accumulating more wealth because of this, basically. And it's just a feedback loop where now and then, like, some people will see number go up and then get attracted, which is then just even more demand, and it kind of blows up. Was what kind of why we get these bubbles, but like every bubble we get, you know, you get a whole new set of users who fall down the Bitcoin rabbit hole like we all did, and be like, okay, no, this thing's actually got real meat behind it. And, you know, number go up technology does create bubbles, but it also is going to be the foundation of our entire economy. And once we have, you know, the entire world on this thing, it won't be bubbles. It'll just be, we're all holding a deflationary asset and, you know, just gaining wealth, just because, you know, we don't have inflation taking away our wealth.
Woo. Bravo, Ben. See,
no fucking yeah.
I know why you're one of my good friends. I talk like a degenerate idiot, and Ben says the exact same thing, but like to the T 100 times better. Anyone want to add a few more 2 cents before I kind of pivot to the second half? Because those are basically the noob questions that we have. We have one more, but it's going to be super. I'm gonna just shut it down real quick.
I got something for you.
Jim, yeah, hit it.
So this number go up technology, I find it fascinating. I've been deep into trying to write something about how unique Bitcoin is and how I consider it a type of a perfect invention, perfect money. Humans, you know, money being a tool. The tool of money has come in many forms. It's worked well sometimes, it's worked poorly other times. We have this math-based money, electric money, electronic, you know, based on ones and zeros and based on math, which can be in many ways perfect. And as humans, we're always trying to optimize. And as you study this NGU technology, you start to realize what a great money this is and how beneficial it is to use it and own it and promote it and get everybody on board to this one system, how great it will help everybody. And so it's a natural feedback loop. Humans want a really good tool for money. And as more people learn about it, it just feeds on itself. All the technical stuff Ben was just saying before is part of what makes this perfect type of money. It has game theory, it has cryptography to secure it, it's got network effects now that it's been around for 12 years. So a lot of people, you know, it's a lot of people have onboarded and learned and adopted it. So it's on a roll at this point. It's a snowball going downhill. It's pretty much impossible to stop. And so it feeds on itself, and it just, the number going up is the adoption of more people into a limited system with only so many little chunks in it. And every chunk gets worth more as more people want a piece of the pie, so to speak. And so we got this perfect money that the humans of this planet always wish they had. No one group gets to control it. It's just fascinating. And what it's doing is it's creating a universal language for the planet to align everybody, to be able to price everything against everything else universally across the planet one day, just evening out society, making life more fair for everybody, removing the desire to wage war. Governments should all shrink. And so many things are connected to having a really good money and having everybody use the same one instead of hundreds and hundreds. Nick was saying it earlier, you know, you guys were all saying it. If people converge on the best money, but they got to know it's out there. They got to learn about it. We've got to get everybody onboarded. We're still working on the interface, you know, the wallets, all the different software, but the concept is there and the base layer is built and it's working fabulous. You know, it stores value and it's safe. If you know how to work with it, it's a really good place to take your productivity and stick it there and not let it drain out through inflation. And, you know, it's fascinating. Number go up technology is math-based electronic money created around what humans absolutely need as a perfect money. we finally have this, and it's just going to make it go up forever for the rest of humanity. It's fascinating. So it's way more than just the tech. It fits in with a human need, like a deep human need to connect with each other and to survive and to thrive. Got to have a good working money, and we now have it.
Beautiful. Preach. Preach, my brother.
Say something real quick.
Yeah, hit it.
See, most people, I let's say everybody understands the basic idea of work. You know, you do something, you move something, you build something. That all is work, and it's about exerting energy and all this stuff. And so people understand that. And so I think it's important to maybe illustrate to somebody that the miners are actually doing work. And what the product is new Bitcoins, right? And those new Bitcoins represent work. And then because of, you know, the mathematical underpinnings of Bitcoin and this kind of stuff, the new Bitcoins represent like work, and there's a direct relationship between what the miners are actually doing and the result. And so I think that that's like an important fact whenever we get into all these different kind of ideas, that it might be one of the more important points to make. And so when you purchase some Bitcoin, you're exchanging dollars for this thing that represents work that has actually been exerted in the real world. But the cool thing is that when you add your Satoshis to your wallet, I think something that people need to see for themselves is watching those UTXOs be buried in confirmations. And then it might be an important idea to explain to them that whenever a UTXO is buried in confirmations, all those confirmations sitting on top also represent like significant amounts of work, as the network like verifies all this information and blah, blah, blah. And so I think that that's an important concept that people can build upon in this conversation with new people, is that it actually represents real work. And so it has value. And that's one of the like frustrating things, like when it comes up, is, oh, like Bitcoin isn't backed by anything. And it's like, it absolutely is. It is absolutely backed by computational work that is exerted in the real world by miners. And so I don't know. I just wanted to add that I think that that's an important concept to introduce to somebody that's asking about Bitcoin. So I just wanted to add that.
No, Randy, I love that phrasing. Bitcoin represents work. Like, man, that's such a good distillation of information and such a good angle to send our pre-coiners down the rabbit hole with. So kudos to you, dude. That was beautiful. Anyone want to add a few more things, and then we'll just kind of transition into like current events, which is Bitcoin related.
I think Winekus wanted to hit it.
Yeah, Winekus, your comment in the chat was fire.
Two words. Let's go. But yeah,
let's go.
On top of that, I think Randy nailed it. As far as number go up, we're talking about the US dollar value of Bitcoin. So the external factors of the money printer go burr is going to make the number go up because Bitcoin is fixed. And the fact that miners are putting their energy towards it and you're seeing the hash rate go up, people are going to have to sell their Bitcoin in order to survive. So they clearly value it. When the halving cycle comes around, that means the number has to go up even more because they're getting less Bitcoin out of it. So that's my two cents on number go up tech.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think it's a good point of what you said. You know, like Bitcoin number go up because fiat number go down. And, you know, like once you understand that simple aspect of it, it's almost like a fire hose for you to try to get as many sets as humanly possible. But beautiful, Wenik, it's beautiful. All right, the last question we got here from our noob friends was how to sell Bitcoin. And so we're just gonna end this one short by telling them you don't, you hodl. So next question. and we're gonna transition. So we started off the show with saying how it's been a hell of a week in Bitcoin world and the world at large. And so I think we'll just end tonight's episode on talks about censorship and how Bitcoin is censorship resistant. So if you've been sleeping under a rock this past week, then you aren't aware that the president of the United States was kicked off of Twitter, was kicked off of basically every social media platform that he was involved with, as well as having some of his bank accounts closed. So say what you will about President Trump, but this is just a larger issue for individuals at large. It's like, if you aren't aware that this is possible to you in your life, if you aren't concerned about the idea of being canceled to this magnitude, then either you're basically, you know, a zombie and you're not doing anything at all, like not like literally nothing, because at this point, who knows what could be a liability for being canceled at this point. You know, you say the wrong thing and you're done. Like you might not even say the wrong thing. Maybe you just have the wrong views and you're done. And so like Nick said it, we, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners have slowly migrated to Mastodon, and who knows if it'll actually overtake Bitcoin Twitter, because Twitter does have the network effects, but it might become a little safe haven for communication between Bitcoiners, which would be pretty cool. But just the idea, just the concept of like, for any whim of the mob, you can just be completely shut off from the world. Is just, it's, you know, it's terrifying, especially someone like me that I just like to joke, you know, like I like to make people laugh. I like to say outrageous things. And if you get upset about it, then like, I know where you're coming from. And sometimes I just say things to get a rise out of people, to make myself laugh, et cetera. It might not even be what I mean or believe, but you know, like I try to speak truth to power as much as possible. But there's also times when I just like to joke and you know, like make people laugh and just have a good time and take things lightly. And me and Nick were talking about it yesterday. It's like, man, like all of our jokes, like we're very liable to get canceled. And but the shining beacon of this all is like, you can't cancel my money, and that's Bitcoin. And so, you know, it would be a missed opportunity if we didn't basically ram this into our listeners' head that, you know, you can cancel me off of every social media platform, but you can't cancel Bitcoin. And if you're a little more tech savvy, you can't cancel encrypted messaging like PGP and etc. So I just, you know, like let's just get into it. Nick, do you got some thoughts to this, and then we'll just pass the mic around.
I think it's pretty scary with all the censorship and everything they're doing. Like the importance, like I've known Bitcoin is important for its censorship resistant qualities, you know, for years now. But it's a totally different understanding I have of it when I actually see in real life, you know, serious stuff like this happen, like a, you know, social media company literally censored the most powerful man in the entire world. And that's crazy to me. And they have a lot more influence than I originally thought. And now I just think social media is just a giant communist echo chamber. I mean, outside of Bitcoin Twitter, obviously. But yeah, this is a really slippery slope. They now have full control over social media. I think, in my honest opinion, through my research, I think they're trying to make conservative speech illegal. They've kind of already done that in Canada. They will ban you and, you know, use whatever you post online against you. Yeah, social media became a very scary place over the past week or so. They're expanding the Patriot Act and making it so that they are looking at all your social media. So all your public social media is now like being monitored by like the FBI and stuff. So it's pretty much like the reason for this is because they said that this, in my opinion, staged raid on Capitol Hill, that was apparently domestic terrorism. I just rolled my eyes there, but they said that they can't ever let that happen again. So they need to catch it before it happens. And they want to catch that by reading everyone's social media posts and, you know, quote unquote, stopping domestic terrorism. And not only is that total bullshit, especially since they didn't do that for any of the Antifa or Black Lives Matter riots that literally destroyed cities and lives and killed police and stuff, but they're going to heavily abuse that. And I mean, like, I can just imagine, like, you know, like traveling and meeting up with one of you guys and messaging you on Twitter, like, hey, like, you know, let's meet up and hang out, or let's grab a drink or something. And then by the time we get to wherever we're going, the fucking police are there to arrest us for, you know, breaking quarantine and domestic terrorism or whatever bullshit they deem it to be. But social media, again, just in my opinion, became a scary place to be. And it's, I fully support the Bitcoiners who have decided to leave social media, because I've been deciding it as well, but I'm on the fence right now.
Looks like
we're, let me throw in a couple things.
You can go on, Randy. I was just gonna say, it looks like we're all gonna have to share PGP keys and stuff.
Yes, yes. Okay, that's what I was, one of the things I was gonna get into. One thing that I want to kind of point out specifically is, it was pretty easy for people to migrate over to Mastodon. And then if you noticed, like, people were publishing like follow lists and this kind of stuff. And one thing that I want to point out specifically that I think is important is, you can export your follow list on Mastodon. And so I think that that would be very important, so that it, okay, with this scenario, right, where, you know, say, because the server issue is a problem, right? You know, and they can shut down IP addresses and all this stuff, DNS blocking and all this. And so I think it's going to be critical for one to export your follow list. And then, yes, like you were saying, like, if you don't have like a PGP key, and it's very important to actually push that to a key server. And so it's like the whole web of trust thing and all this stuff, right? And so establish your PGP key, your public key, as soon as possible, and then begin to associate your online identities with it. You can actually embed your, like, say, icon, like, you can look at the thing and I have this yellow, you know, B and this kind of stuff. That's actually embedded in my key. And so there's a lot of things that you can do to really, like, you know, make your web identity verifiable. Even if you're like a NIM or something like that, you can embed your icon into the key itself. And so that's critical. And I think there was some preliminary kind of like introductory things for PGP on like Bitcoin Magazine, but there could probably be a better one as with a little bit more advanced explanations. And so establish your PGP key, export your follow lists, and then even if like there's some crackdown and they start like taking down like Mastodon servers, you can just spin up a new one. And so that's the beautiful thing is it'll be the endless whack-a-mole game, you know, because people will be able to coordinate and they'll just be able to spin up new servers. And then with your PGP key, you can verify your identity. And so it'll be the worst whack-a-mole game that they'll like. It just the expense and frustration that some of these entities would have to go through to squash these Mastodon instances would be so ridiculous. And so just to be repetitive, you know, export your follow list and begin to establish your identity with a known PGP key. And then there's the key based thing too. It's also useful, but you really don't want to rely on Keybase either. But that's a good way to begin as well, as far as like establishing your online identity with like verifiable keys. So that's enough out of me.
Beautiful. Christopher?
I think it's kind of important to take this in context. I mean, here we are, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, and a lot of us aren't able to meet up in physical spaces and exchange ideas. And here we have, you know, social media, like this gargantuan empire that are able to like individually control, you know, what is okay to say and what isn't okay when, you know, all of our, you know, previously private conversations like have been taken away from us. So that dynamic, it's a huge problem. I think Jack Dorsey actually pointed to Bitcoin as an, you know, censorship resistant model to shoot for, because he does recognize that social media companies have far too much power to censor people on a large scale. So kind of what Randy was talking about like, you know, exporting your follow list, you know, Bitcoin already does that. I mean, we're basically exporting the transaction list to each of our own computers. And then if someone, you know, makes a valid transaction, you know, basically every single node on the network is retweeting that because, hey, they follow the rules and they paid the fee. And so they get to participate. And it's a very fair way to operate on a global scale where there isn't one or a couple decision makers that say, oh, this is okay, or this isn't okay.
Beautiful. I love that the blockchain people are just retweeting the transactions. I never thought of that like that.
This is a good time to shout out Nick's video about what is PGP and how to use like various different clients he did for Bitcoin Magazine a few months ago.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I didn't go too into detail about like complex ways to do it, but I did show you like a simple way, you know, what is PGP and how to get it set up super simple.
Yeah, there's a few good ones on YouTube as well. People can just, you know, search on YouTube, but maybe we'll do some things about it. But Tony, you want to chime in?
Yeah, for sure. So I will take a little bit, maybe not very nice stance in this one. So first of all, for me personally, from my point of view, there are some things that are not acceptable, like, for example, violence. Yeah. So I'm up for free speech, and I think it's very essential, you know, to our survival as a human species. Like, exchange of technologies and ideas should be free, without any licensing, without any, you know, like, just free distribution of knowledge. It's amazing. And at the same time, I believe that if you hold a platform, and then there are certain rules that you're applying to, let's say, do not promote violence or hate speech. Yeah, I don't know what were the tweets and what happened, but for me, as I see it, law is the same regardless of your social status. And for me personally, this is nice to see. So if, you know, someone is, you know, doing whatever things, like, you know, that can harm other people, and this person gets a ban, I'm up for it. You know, like, I'm fine with that. Yeah, because I understand that it's not acceptable, and it kind of makes me at peace that I know that the law will be applied. Like, it's fairer than the law system. Yeah, so people just like ban at will. And at the same time, just to bring it back to us, what happens in our chat? When the shitcoiners come around, they get banned. Is it free speech? So I see also that we're a bit, you know, we're going against our own words. So if we are for free speech, why do we banning shitcoiners from the chat? So, like, I believe that the only solution to this is Bitcoin, as Bitcoin solves the violence, and we should buy as much Bitcoin as we can, because eventually there will be one united field when there is, like, less politics, less violence, less aggression. Everyone is contained. So I'm up for PGP encryption, and I was using, I think, Cleopatra. I was playing around with it when I just got into Bitcoin. But yeah, that's my two cents.
Well, Tony, one thing, first and foremost, we haven't banned any shitcoiners in our Discord. We only ban the bots.
I didn't know that.
All right, we would probably just make fun of them and use our free speech rights. And then on the other point, like, I think I agree with you to an extent. It's just the thing that was appalling, in my opinion, is I don't think I ever saw Trump say anything inciting violence. It was just like, you're responsible for this violence, therefore you're banned. And so, like, I think I'd agree with you, but it's just like a slippery slope when it comes to, you know, like, the powers that be, big tech, just being able to ban you at a, you know, for whatever they just don't like. And it's definitely, you know, something as a Bitcoiner where it's like, okay, Bitcoin is going to be next on that list at some point, whether it's this year, next year, a few years from now. Like, they're going to be able to use those powers and be like, oh, we don't like Bitcoiners now, so let's just ban them all, because it's not fair that they prospered while the world is in shambles. But I think I'd agree with you, you know, like, I believe, you know, in the non-aggression principle. Like, I'm not trying to hurt anyone. I don't want people to hurt me. So, like, you know, like, yeah, if you're telling people to, you know, kill people on your platform, then by all means, then they probably should get banned. But back to our server, we only ban bots. We'll make fun of shitcoiners, and then they'll leave, probably.
All right, yeah, that's the thing, because I thought that there is some hammer ban in place, yeah, because they disappear very quickly with all their, like, marketing strategies and stuff. But yeah, like I said, I cannot tell. I haven't seen the tweets. I'm not entirely sure what happened. And like, I deleted Facebook a long time back because I was saving some messages. Like, you can save, like, send messages to yourself. And at some point, I went to check, and my messages were not there. So messages that I wanted to save as a notepad kind of a thing on Facebook, they were deleted due to some guidelines, you know, policies. And I was like, wait a second, it was not any porn, anything. Like, maybe I was in shitcoinery back then, so maybe there was some shitcoin stuff happening that it was deleted. But I was just surprised, you know. I went to check my messages that I sent to myself, and they were deleted. And that was the point when I deleted Facebook. And after Twitter hack, I realized that I use Twitter, and at any given moment I can become a shitcoin shill, or, you know, send me your BTC on this address, because, like, you know, all the people got hacked eventually. So it's like, I clearly realized that technology is in a big, basically, pile of shit, and there are ways out of it. Yeah.
Yeah,
So I don't know, like if someone can shield a better way to tweet and meme, like I have no idea what Mastodon is. I've seen Keybase, but you know, what are the options? Guide us.
Mastodon is kind of like it's an open source version of Twitter, but Twitter is where all the people are. So like Twitter has the network effects, and like if you want to talk to people outside of Bitcoin Twitter, then you want to be on Twitter, 'cause Mastodon is just it's just Bitcoiners. Well, it's not just Bitcoiners, but like the Bitcoin hackers where everyone hangs out is just basically Bitcoiners.
It's like a Twitter Citadel.
Let me throw something in here. Let me throw something in here about violence, right? Here's the thing, though. When you're defending yourself, you're employing violence. And so, like, I really just kind of disagree with this point of like, it's kind of quasi, like, Orwellian to, like, frame violence in a certain way, because the reality, guess what? If somebody breaks into my house, you better believe I'm going to employ violence to defend myself. And so I just really don't like how this whole argument is framed. And with that said, like, there's other forms of violence, because the reality is like, well, let's just kind of like maybe use violation. I mean, like, we Americans are being violated year after year in so many different ways. And so I really believe this whole argument is just really kind of like, this whole issue, I should say, politically and stuff, is it's just a really, like, vague, really bad argument. Because, like, where does, and like I said, I'm not advocating, like, violence per se. I'm just trying to, like, frame it in a different way, is like, at what point is, like, does it actually just become self-defense? I mean, with just all the, like, legal stuff. I mean, just to, like, walk, okay, we'll put it in a different frame, right? When you have to go fly, and then you have to get all touched up by some fucking TSA agent, and they gotta, like, touch up your kids, dude, guess what? I consider that a fucking act of violence. And so, to me, like, I really don't like the way this shit's being framed, because violence, you know what, is sometimes necessary in self-defense. And it's a really, like, that's the slippery slope, is like, what is violence? Some bureaucrat with a badge touching some kids in a fucking airport? Like, oh, it's for public safety. No, you're not allowed to do that. That's we have the whole argument has been like, the quote unquote, like, Overton window has been pushed so far that, like, we don't even really know what we're talking about anymore, dude. It's like the whole thing is so skewed up. It's these people, when they, like, push these, like, bills through, you know what, in some form, that those are acts of violence too. It's like, so I just would really like to broaden the definition of what violence is. Violence can be done with a pen, and it can be done with a weapon too. It's they're almost synonymous. A pen is a weapon. And so I just want to, like, interject, like, let's take a step back and let's review what we even define as violence, because we are being violated every day in all kinds of ways. And
Agreed.
so,
Agreed, definitely.
anyway, I didn't mean to go off too crazy, but I just needed to interject that, so.
Yeah, for sure. I believe that every person has their own understanding of what violence means to them, and like some people like to be, you know, kicked, and for them it's like it's enjoyable even. So everyone has their own definition, but I believe that we should have freedom of movement. So any type of police search is kind of ridiculous, because the world that I see is the world where everyone has, you know, Bitcoin and enough food not to steal, and we can move and, you know, exchange between one another freely, and there is no need to even self-defend, because like violence comes when people want to take something from someone else or corrupt someone, like, you know, basically corrupt the free trade, free exchange. Yeah. So when, for me, violence is when you're trying to take something not on a voluntary exchange basis, but on something else than voluntary exchange, because it means that you take something else from the person that the person is not willing to give up. Otherwise, it will be a voluntary exchange. So an exchange that happens between people when one participant is not volunteering, it's a sort of violence. I agree with that. And at the same time, you know, when I see campaigns, let's say on Facebook, that cause massive slaughter of, you know, certain population, whether it's Buddhist monks killing Muslim monks or Muslim people killing Buddhist people, you know, and it's like at some point, like I'm asking myself, I'm contradicting myself at the same time. Like I believe in freedom of speech. And at the same time, if I see that the freedom of speech causes death, then it's like, should there be just an open platform and anyone can do whatever they want? And how this going to happen, how this will work, like complete freedom of speech and like everyone is manipulating each other in some subtle ways, and then eventually it can, like, I'm not entirely sure, you know, how, like, how to form that, just a wild west when you're scrolling Twitter and at the same time, like, you're seeing things about Bitcoin and the next photo is a photo of like decapitated body, and it's like, you know, you were not expecting that. It's a freedom of speech, but at the same time, like, should the freedom be given to people who serve Twitter and they can, like, themselves ban what they don't want to see or hear? So I don't know how exactly we can achieve this without being bombarded by lies, by, you know, violent comments and stuff and abuse. So I'm not entirely sure that I see the way out, only, like, through education and just general peace in the world. That's, like, buy Bitcoin, that's my idea.
Let me throw this one last idea out, right, about this. Is, I mean, I tried to even look for the article, right? But a long time ago, I'm talking probably 30 years ago, right? You know, because they asked the Dalai Lama if it was okay to employ violence in self-defense. And he said yes. So, it, like, that's, like, again, like I said, I'm not advocating, like, aggression, like, undue aggression. But when it comes to self-defense, even the Dalai Lama said employing violence was, like, correct. And so, but to your argument, like, I totally agree. And to me, it's kind of like, I would just be cool if they actually enforced the rules in a reasonable and fair way. I think some of the underlying frustration has to do with their, like, unfair and selective enforcement. That's really the issue, I believe, with Twitter and all this stuff. Is because there's still tweets up calling for all kinds of violence, but those aren't being taken down. And so there's no openness, there's no transparency when it comes to their enforcement of these policies. That's the frustration. Is so I understand what you're saying, but I would be just cool with them being open with whatever their policy is and actually enforcing it fairly. And then that's at that point, it's just a choice whether you're going to participate. But the problem is they say one thing And then people get on Twitter and these different platforms. And you know what? People actually make a living doing like content production. And, you know, these outlets become part of their business model. But then they can just arbitrarily shut you down because maybe you want to sell, like, I don't know, cough, like, you know, like, black, what is that? I forget, but, you know, there's like a coffee shop, coffee makers that are like pro Second Amendment and stuff. It's like there's no fairness to the application. And then they can rug pull you anytime you want after you've invested like years building a business and whatever, whether you're just like a quote unquote like influencer personality or you have a brand and that's part of your business model. So that's where they really need to be open and transparent about their enforcement of policy.
Yeah, that's definitely. I completely. I'm on your side. It's I just cannot imagine myself personally the amount of job needed to do that, you know, to make sure that, you know, there is no like double speak because people are used, you know, different, like the language is changing so fast that it's very difficult sometimes to understand what person means by using the words. And then there are, I don't know, thousands of different languages people can communicate. You know, they create their own languages. So just idea of moderating something is pretty crazy. So this is why we should show respect to Nick, Optimus Phil, and our great Thomas Jestifer for doing this amazing job. Thank you guys for keeping this all together.
Dude, thank you very much. Thanks for showing up. I mean, it would be a huge circle jerk if it was just me, Nick, and Jestifer. So you guys make it awesome, man.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Thank you for that. So, Optimus, how are we doing on time?
Yeah, we went a little over an hour today. I think we're rolling up to like an hour 20. So I think we'll just get some last words and then actually, Winicus, I know what that unmute was. We'll do that right now. I know exactly what he's thinking.
All right. We on?
Yeah, we're still on. We're still on. 1 second. So, guys. All right. Last week, we did over under 42K. I guess we were all extremely bullish and we were wrong, even though it basically touched 42K within the week. But we are a little bit under 42K today during the recording. The current price, it's a little dump. We're at 36,868. And so, I don't know. What are we thinking over under next week? Should we hold, just keep it at 42K since we haven't broke that?
We're keeping it.
All right. So, guys, over under 42K by next week. I think that's going to be an easy over. But maybe I'm just retardedly bullish.
Over.
You, I was the only one who said under.
Were you? Oh man, we'll have to re-listen for that one. Jim, all right.
Oh, can you still see the chat? It'll be in there. I typed it in the chat.
Okay, let's see. All right, guys, type your over under in the chat and then we'll get some last words.
Hey, can I say something about that last conversation?
Yeah, hit it, Jim.
Personal servers.
Ooh. Are you shilling what I think you're shilling?
No, I believe the Start 9 guys are going down the right path, and I see a future where everybody hosts their own data, and the interaction is through downloading software that will talk to all the other people that are also hosting their own data, just like the Bitcoin network full nodes talk to each other now. The idea that many people might want to have full nodes to protect their money lends itself to the concept of having a constantly turned on computer in your house that can allow you to serve your own content to the world, but only to the people who you allow to receive it. So when you are connecting with the world, it's like on Twitter, you can allow someone to follow you. Let's say you're a bigwig and you can charge for your content because you have a demand. You can let people link into your feed by them paying you over the Lightning Network. And if you don't like the way they interact, you can cut them off and decide not to receive their money anymore. Or let's say you're somebody who wants to connect with a lot of people, but you open up your feed for free, so in hopes that people will listen to what you have to say, and you build your network from there. And so whether it's, you know, a personal little private network, friends and family, or the whole world like on Twitter, I think the possibility to build the interconnected software for each person to own their own data. And, when, and just think about it, you're interacting with an interface that looks just like Twitter. Let's just use that for an example. You post a tweet, where does it go? It goes right to your server. But it also sends a signal out to everybody who's following you to say, hey, next time you're online, we're going to send you a packet, you know, and it's all PGP encrypted. You've already decided you trust each other because you've got each other's, you know, identities. And when they log on, their feed populates with all the signals from all the people that they want to get a feed from when that person has posted something. And so you see it at your end just like a Twitter feed. It just populates with stuff. And you can interact back and forth. And I think that could be made to happen for any program that the internet uses right now. And so I think that's where it will go someday. At least I hope it will. And then you could charge for your content. If your content has value, you could charge for everything you create. Those people who want to pay for it. That's the way it should be. Then the other thing is, internet service providers have no ability to shut you off because they wouldn't even know where your server is. They wouldn't even know what you're serving out because they wouldn't be entitled to get a copy of it. You would have to only the people you let see it can see it. And then you would have to know your IP address and shut off your actual link to the internet because they can't shut off your content if you're hosting it. So it just changes the incentives. You're not asking permission from anybody anymore. And that's where it has to go, I think. We're going to do it with money. Why not content? And I think the Spark Nine guys are on the right path. I hope they're thinking big like that. I think they might be. They've got so many great ideas coming down the road. So think about it. Personal service. Everybody's going to have one day. That's my take. Thank you.
Ooh. Well, Jim, you just got my mind working. Like, we're going into interesting times. If that's what we can do, you know, like if everyone is on that plane, it's going to be an interesting future that we're a part of.
I think it's going to naturally migrate that way, and the Bitcoin community is going to make it happen because we already own these always online computers that talk to each other all the time. It's really easy to piggyback on. I think that Start Nine guys were smart to launch their product with Bitcoin full node as one of the main characteristics. And then they've got messaging, they've got the password manager, they're gonna have the ability, like you know this ring system that's out there, right? When your doorbell goes off, it sends a signal to the internet, and your phone or wherever you receive the message, it takes a few seconds for it to show up because it's routing through the internet. It's going through somebody else's computer. When it's stored, you know, they say the cloud. What's the cloud? Another person's computer in a warehouse somewhere. But your video of your house, you walking around your own house, is on someone else's computer. And so the Start Nine guys want you to be able to set up your own cameras in your own house, linked to your own server in your own house, encrypted over Tor. And when somebody comes to your door and your phone rings, you're connecting to your server in your house and your camera in your house, and nobody else on the planet knows it's even happening. That's the way a security system should work, not the cloud. Are you kidding? How many cops and police districts want access to people's ring data? They just want to collect more info and eavesdrop on people. Just wait till one day some man in a black robe writes words on paper and authorizes some police force to, whenever they want, get access to someone's ring through the system without even telling them, like almost like getting a warrant. And you know, the police can come to your door with this piece of paper that says, hey, guess what? Someone said we're allowed to break in. Like, whoa, what do you mean? Who's someone? A guy with a black robe. I don't even know the guy. But he said it's okay because we've shown him evidence that gives us reason to believe you're breaking a law. You know, so who knows where it could all go like that. But if you're hosting your own stuff, they can't shut you off with changes again. Anyway, sorry, I took up too much time. My thing is, I think we'll be over 42 by this time next week. Definitely.
Awesome. Jim.
Go back Quarterback is over and the big money still wants to get in, and they're afraid it's going to drop again, and they're going to push us past 42 by next week.
Bullish. Bullish.
Yep.
All right, yeah. Well, we got Ben saying over. We got Weineke saying over. We got Jesterfer saying over. So I think this week we're all uber bullish, and we'll see if we're right next week. And as this discussion has shown to me and probably the listener, is we're kind of at a crossroads. We're at a fork in the road right now, and if you're not paying attention, then we may be slipping into a more dystopian world. But if you're aware and awake, then there is tools out there that can help you secure your freedom. It won't be easy, but I think we all have a choice in this future that we're writing together. And you might just have to wake up a little bit and take a little more decisive action into your life. So I'll end it right there. But Nick, you want to say something just for you guys? Want to wrap it up, and then we'll call this one a show.
Yeah. Thanks for everyone for coming out. Another great episode. I'm really looking forward to next week, and I don't have too much else to say, but buy Bitcoin. If that price, that first pump up to 42K, if that wasn't Elon buying, then we are going to be pumping to new higher prices. I'm not a fan of him, but if I were you, I'd be paying attention to Barry Silbert's tweets on Elon, because he's not joking.
Bullish. Just sir, you want to say something, wrap it up, or we can end this?
Sell your chairs.
Sell your chairs. We'll end it on that one. Sell your chairs, guys. We'll see you next week.